Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And the Institute supports Radio Liberty, and we certainly support them. We think they're doing a very important job, because, of course, unless the American people understand our Constitution, they can't understand why everything that's going on today and most of what's going on in Washington, D.C. is wrong, it's against the law, why we have people who are back in Washington, D.C. who have sworn to uphold the Constitution, and they're going to interpret it any way they want to. They're going to do whatever they want to, and this is the majority of the people back there who ridicule the Constitution, these ideas that we should be ruled by law rather than by men. There are people who will tell you we are a democracy. No, we're not. We're a republic. Every one of our states is a republic. There's no mention of the concept of democracy in any of the founding documents of this country, whether it be the Bill of Rights or the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or the Federalist Papers or the writings of any of the 50 states, the constitutions of the 50 states, other than to decry democracy and to say we never want a democracy, we want a republic, because that is, of course, a government of laws where the power of the government is restricted. And that's what our founders wanted, and they don't teach us in school. They don't teach it in our textbooks. Our politicians, our media, the people who run the country keep telling us we're a democracy. It's one of the great lies of all time. But it's been said that it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, why, people will believe. And with that as a background, Pastor David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be on your show and talk about these great and very important principles. Just like you said, the message that we're a democracy is an absolute lie, but there's a reason why they have to promote that lie, because they know that democracies always devolve, as our founder said, democracies always devolve into a dictatorship of one form or another, and that they don't last long. They commit suicide, as I believe it was John Adams who said that. And the result is that tyranny will reign, and I'm not exactly sure who is the original author of these thoughts, but the three tenets of tyranny I'd like to share with people, because they need to recognize they play a very vitally important role in stopping a tyrannical government from gaining power. And the first tenet of tyranny is really drawn on the biblical doctrine of the fall of all mankind, that any power that can be abused will be abused. Any human being trusted with power is going to attempt at some point in time to abuse that power, because they're fallen, they're sinful. No human being is to be trusted with power that is unchecked by other forces, other people and other institutions. Well, the second tenet of tyranny follows right along there, that abuse always expands to fill the limits of resistance to it. If we don't resist tyranny, if we don't put up a fight against it, tyranny will prevail. And that's the third tenet, that people do not resist the abuses of others, they will have no one to resist the abuses of themselves, and tyranny will prevail. We see the example of World War II, where people stood by and just let Hitler tyrannically not just take control of Germany, but then invade and go on, and nobody stopped him until it was a disastrous situation. But we know that in our country, our entire form of government is designed to prevent tyranny, and we the people are involved in actually standing against and preventing tyranny in some very, very practical ways that we'll talk about after the break.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney as we talk about these ideas that are foundational to the survival of our freedom and of our nation. David, go right ahead.
Well, one of the recent decisions here by a federal circuit court in Virginia had to do with a fellow, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was a a foreigner in our country, legally here, not illegally here, but he was arrested, and he went through our criminal justice system, being accused of terrorism and so forth. But he has been recently handed over to the military justice system, the military prison, military courts, in which, you know, there's really no constitutional rights at all. And he was appealing this through the federal court system to say, wait a minute, how can you just turn me over to the military justice system? This is wrong. This is against the constitution of the country. And that federal court determined, no, it was not. This could happen not only to a foreigner, a resident foreigner, resident alien in our country, but a citizen as well. In their ruling, they said a citizen as well could be turned over to the military justice, quote-unquote, system, and military prison system, in which you do not have any constitutional rights. This kind of thing is taking place where tyranny is just advancing rapidly. And if you look at how it is moving forward, many of the ways in which it has made its greatest advance is in the judicial branch of our government. The judiciary has been used by those who want to destroy our form of government because they recognize that the people would never permit the destruction of our government or our form of government by the legislative or the executive means. And there's elective control there where we vote in and vote out people in both the executive and legislative branches. But we don't have that same elective control in the judiciary. And so they've chosen the judiciary as their weapon by which to destroy our constitutional republic. It's very interesting, you know, our founders foresaw this potential coming down. Thomas Jefferson, for example, he wrote a letter to his friend William Jarvis in September 28, 1820. He said, "You seem to consider judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions, a very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. Our judges are as honest as other men, and not more so, and their power is more dangerous as they are in office for life and not responsible as the other functionaries are to the elective control. The Constitution has erected no such single tribunal, knowing that to whatever hands confided with corruptions of time and party, its members would become despots." And that's exactly what we see taking place in the judicial branch of our government. These men and women, some in some examples, have become despots.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here with David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney, just talking about this idea of giving power to judges. And, of course, he quotes Thomas Jefferson as saying, look, judges are as honest as anybody else is, but all men are corrupt. Why would you think the judges would be able to, certainly using their own judgment, certainly arrive at things any better than anybody else would? And since men are corrupt and judges are corrupt, you cannot give them power. And, of course, the whole idea was to limit the power of the judges, of the legislature, of the executive branch of government, to the what it says in the Constitution, not how the judge feels, how the law should be interpreted, but how it should be interpreted according to the Constitution. It was this idea of having a foundation built upon, really, upon God's law, because, of course, initially this was a Christian nation. The vast majority of the people were Christians. The foundation of our law was something known as Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England, and for at least 100, perhaps as long as 150 years, it was the very foundation of law here in the United States. And, of course, Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England was based upon the Bible, and quite openly they talked about it. You know, and Blackstone admitted this was the foundation of his laws. You go back to the Bible, you go back to God's Word. But, you see, there are people who hate God. There are people who want a dictatorship in America. That's why they had to convince us this was a democracy, and the politicians could do whatever they want to. And, oh, yes, well, as they say, we've got the judges to be sure that, you know, what they're doing is constitutional. But then, of course, we give the judges the ability to do whatever they want to, not about the Constitution, but how they feel about issues. And that's where we get into real problems. We have corrupt men deciding the way our government should be run without going back to the very foundation of this country, the Constitution of the United States, which is the foundation of our freedom and, of course, the foundation to which all laws should be based, because the original laws of the United States were based upon God's law. So pick the story up there.
Amen. And Thomas Jefferson was very right that it is a grave error to consider judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions, which really is the attitude and opinion of most Americans today, that, well, hey, if the Supreme Court rules in a certain way, then that's, quote, the law of the land, whether it's Roe v. Wade or Lawrence v. Texas, you pick the case. If the Supreme Court has ruled, that's the final decision, and the other branches of government have nothing to gainsay against what the Supreme Court says. And yet our founders created three branches that were equal. In a sense, maybe even the legislative and executive branches were designed to be more powerful. Several of our founders said that they envisioned the judiciary to be the weakest branch, the least powerful branch. That's why when the Supreme Court first met, it met in the basement. It was down in the basement of Capitol. It didn't have its own building. It didn't have any prominence. It was down in the basement because it was seen as the least of the three branches. But we know that those three branches were all created to be a check and balance against each other, such that none of them would accrue power to themselves alone. None of them would become the ultimate arbiters of what's constitutional. But what most people don't know, that in addition to those three branches of government serving as checks and balances against one another, our founders designed a four-level structure of government to prevent any government monopoly from taking place. So you have the federal level, but beneath that you have the state and then the county and the local level. Four levels of government, each which were to serve as a check and balance against the others. In particular, the states, and this is found very clearly in Federalist 45, the states were to be a check against the federal power. The states were to have wide-ranging powers, the federal government to have very limited, enumerated, delegated powers, and the states, being jealous for their own powers, would naturally prevent the federal government from taking powers that were not specifically granted to it by the Constitution.
And, you know, I think the most significant thing, and what most people have forgotten, is that originally our senators were not to be elected by the people. They were to be elected by the state legislatures, so they would represent the states. Because our founding fathers realized that once, of course, the people could vote for the senators, then, of course, you'd have your special interests coming in and providing lots of money and benefit for the senators. And those people who went along and played the game, of course, would get reelected year after year. We see just within this last 24 hours, a senator from Alaska that has actually been indicted for criminal activity, and I think he probably is involved in criminal activity. But so many of our senators are. Why? Because they're not answerable to the people. Well, supposedly we elect them, but really if you have to have a lot of money, and who puts up the money, it's not the average individual. How many people out there in the listening audience, you know, have given more than $1,000 to any political candidate in the last 6 months or in the last year? And of course, it's not the average individual who puts up the money. They have found means by which, of course, the elite can give unlimited money. Of course, I think the figure is something like about $700,000 that you can give to a candidate. Of course, you don't give it to the candidate. You give part of it to the candidate and part to the state committees and part to the either the Republican or Democratic committee. But massive amounts of money can be given that way. Our founding fathers knew that if you had direct election of the senators, you would soon have the corruption of the senators. The senators would act as a brake on the government and represent the states, and that's why they had to pass the 17th Amendment for the direct election of senators, as we move from a Republican form of government into a democracy, into a despotism and destruction. Go right ahead.
And so our founders wisely structured these four levels to prevent that from taking place. And you're right, you're absolutely right. The 17th Amendment was a destruction of the design that our founders originally built in, a check of the four levels against one another, particularly the state against the federal government. But there's another aspect of the check that our founders built into the system that checks all three branches of government and checks all four levels of government, and that is the independent jury. As we said earlier, Thomas Jefferson warned that we should never consider judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions. You know, who really, in his mind, was the ultimate arbiter of all constitutional questions? It was the independent jury. And we know this from his statement that Jefferson said, I consider trial by jury as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. How do you, according to Jefferson, how do you keep the government honest and the government obedient to the constitution that it has made, that the people have made to form that government? It's the jury and a jury trial. And most people scratch their heads. What's Jefferson talking about? How in the world does a jury trial check the government and keep the government honest to the principles of its constitution? The jury does so by judging the law. That is determining if a law is constitutional or not constitutional. And here in Maryland, for example, our own state constitution says in the Declaration of Rights, number 23, that in a trial of all criminal cases, the jury shall be the judges of the law. And this is an astonishing idea for most Americans because it's been a very, very well-suppressed idea and secret that our founders knew across the board. Whenever you find in the Constitution they refer to a trial by jury, they are talking about this aspect of what it means, a trial by jury. And it was so commonly understood and known and a no-brainer to all of our founders that they didn't even spell it out in our United States Constitution. They knew everybody understood this principle, that the jury judges the law before they actually look at the facts of a case to determine if a person's innocent or guilty. First thing they have to determine, is the law legitimate? And so Jefferson said judges aren't the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions. And then he went on to say that juries are the only anchor yet imagined by man which a government can be held to the principles of the Constitution. So juries really are the ultimate arbiters, case by case. Of course, they're not making a ruling that carries over to another case. They're just making a ruling in one particular case as to whether the law itself is constitutional. Now, this idea, as we've shared before, has ancient history going all the way back, even before Magna Carta, but Magna Carta in English history was the time in which this was enshrined in writing and became a principle to which all Englishmen look back, that they had the right to a jury trial, a jury of their peers. And we know that tyrants are never content when they lose a battle, as in this case King John and the succeeding kings following him in English law, English history. They lost a significant battle. And King John only, you know, signed the Magna Carta under great duress, about to lose his throne and so forth. But he did not want to give juries that kind of power, the power that they had to judge the law. And so we see a pushback years later after Magna Carta was settled. And that pushback came in the form of a parallel court system that was set up in English history. It's called the Court of the Star Chamber. 1487 is when it got its start, and it grew in power during the reign of Henry VII, becoming a powerful separate entity, separate from the King's Council, which is another judicial sort of body in their form of government. And then Henry VIII, in 1491, he and his counselors, Wolsey and Cranmer, they were encouraging plaintiffs to bring their cases directly to the Star Chamber, to bypass the common law courts and all. And the reason it was called the Star Chamber is that if you happened to be an unfortunate soul dragged into that court, you'd look up to the ceiling and it was decorated with all these stars as if you were standing under the heavens. And although this court could not order death sentences, it couldn't impose a death sentence on anyone, it could do anything up to that, including ordering torture, imprisonment, and terrible fines that could strip you of all your property and so on. So this court had enormous power, and under James I, it became even more powerful, and under Charles I, it became expanded to its greatest extent and greatest power, and it became a byword in throughout England for the misuse and abuse of power, because in this court, it was often used to examine cases of sedition, which in practice meant that anytime you oppose the government, anytime you oppose the royal policy, they were going to suppress you by dragging you into this Star Chamber rather than facing a honest court where you'd be judged by a jury of your peers.
And of course they feared the trial by jury because they felt that the jury would be honest. And of course the politicians, the king, wanted of course to be able to convict anybody that opposed him. Well, you go right ahead there, David.
And some of the other ways that this Star Chamber was used is anybody who was a powerful noble, they would be tried in the Star Chamber rather than in the common law court, because they knew in the common law court they were very unlikely that a jury would convict them if they were a powerful noble. And the court sessions for this Star Chamber were held in secret. No public could be there. There could be no reporters, no media. Nobody could report what took place. It was held in secret. There was no right of appeal. Once the Star Chamber issued their ruling, it was final. You could not appeal it, and punishment was swift and severe to anyone who was an enemy of the crown. And again, this was used to suppress any dissent against the king and the policies, the royal policies. And, you know, Dr. Stan, this so closely parallels what has taken place in our day of the military tribunals that are being held and being used to try. Well, now they're saying, well, you know, this just is going to try foreigners that are accused of terrorism, but we know that they've stated very clearly that they will use this and already have used it in at least one or more examples of American citizens accused of treason suddenly dragged into a tribunal. Those court sessions are secret, held in secret. There's no right of appeal, and the punishment is swift, and they do use torture. We know that they're torturing people. They've given themselves the excuse to torture prisoners who fall into this category. And so it's the same pattern we see in our own day, which ought to be a deep concern to every American, that we have resurrected this hated and evil Star Chamber.
But of course they've done this in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who, of course, was allowed to escape from Afghanistan. Time and time again, while the government could have gotten Osama bin Laden, that they knew he was involved with the Islamic terrorist movement. And there are at least 11 times when the CIA or military could have taken Osama bin Laden out prior to September 11th, and they consistently refused to do it. I mean, they had the Predator planes over there. They were following his actions in Afghanistan. These are the drone planes. And, of course, came a time when they could have actually taken him out with a drone plane, and, oh, well, my goodness, we might hit somebody, who wasn't one of Osama bin Laden's followers. And so what was the solution? They stopped flying the drone Predator planes. They did not want to take Osama bin Laden out because they needed an excuse to get us into a war in Afghanistan, to get us into a war with Iraq, and I fear that sooner or later we're going to be in a war with either Pakistan or Iran, or perhaps with both of them, and heaven help us when that occurs, because I don't believe that God is going to look kindly on a country that is out actively fomenting wars and killing people and then torturing people who are captured. Where is the outcry? Where is the moral outrage? Where are our ministers speaking out against the government's doing? And, of course, the sound is deafening in its silence. Go right ahead, Pastor.
It certainly is, Dr. Stan. And the people of England did not take this lying down. Charles I, who has expanded the power of the Star Chamber to its greatest extent, he actually used the Star Chamber as a sort of parliament when he refused to call parliament during the years 1628 to 1640. And he substituted the Star Chamber to function as parliament, completely illegal, completely in violation of the Constitution, because, you see, King Charles believed in what he called the divine right of kings, that he could do whatever he pleased because God had put him on the throne and God had given him a free reign to do whatever. Not only is that completely a violation of English common law and the English Constitution, it's a violation of God's
law. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Pastor David Whitney. He's just talking about the Star Chamber, how it was used, really, of course, to give the king total power over the individual. And eventually, of course, when Charles I used this excessively, why, he himself was then taken by the nobles and had his... They lopped off his head, didn't they?
That's right. They beheaded him finally.
I mean, it was because he actually corrupted the law. And this is how they've handled things in the past. When rulers got to the point where they weren't going by the rules of the government. England had the Magna Carta. England had a system of rule by law, and you had rulers there who, as in America today, felt that they were above the law, they would do whatever they wanted to, and the law was what the king said, or perhaps the law is what the president says it is, and it should never be that way. The whole idea of our government was to limit the power of government so men could be free. But unfortunately, why, of course, now, of course, with the new, this new legislation they have passed to rescue Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, now every one of the transactions that you carry out using a credit card will be reported to the Internal Revenue Service. Now, how many people out there in the listening audience honestly believe that the housing crisis that threatens America today is because the IRS did not know about everything we buy using a credit card? It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with they use a crisis as an excuse to expand their control over the people and to be able to watch them and monitor them much more closely. And with the advantage of computers, they can monitor everybody in the United States in the name, of course, of preserving the housing industry or finding Osama bin Laden or stopping the terrorist threat of America. It's as phony as a $3 bill. They really want control. Go right ahead, Pastor.
Yes, and the tyrants will use any excuse to gain that kind of control. And Charles I used all sorts of excuses for saying that Parliament was not to be called. And finally, in 1641, the people had had enough, and what's called the Long Parliament abolished this hated Star Chamber. But it has lived in infamy. In fact, the Star Chamber name still survives to our day to designate arbitrary, secretive proceedings in opposition to personal rights and liberty, essentially in opposition to our God-given rights as human beings made in His image. And so it was 8 years later that King Charles was put on trial, and in 1649 they determined that he had committed treason. And it's kind of an odd thing for most of us to think, how could a king commit treason? Isn't the king the law? No, the king is subject to the law. Their system, although a monarchy, their system was that no one, including the king, is above the law. The king has responsibilities to obey the law, to enforce the law. In a sense, he's the head of the executive branch of government, the parliament being the legislative and so on. But the king is not above the law. He said he was, and he committed very obvious acts of treason. He had people killed and so on. And so they determined, because he'd committed treason, that he forfeited his life. And so in 1649, he was beheaded for claiming that the divine right of kings empowered him to do whatever he chose. And as you're sharing, the parallels with what's taking place in our country today are uncanny and should be a good, very sobering warning to each of us as Americans that we must stand up and resist tyranny. If we don't, there will be no one, and we ourselves will become slaves or prisoners of this evil system. Well, this glorious revolution, which is the time period there of the latter part of the 17th century, this glorious revolution proved what men could do when they were faced with despotism. And by the way, this glorious revolution was actually an inspiration to our founders in the war against King George III just 127 years later. So this was very recent history to the founders of our country. They understood what took place. In fact, some of the colonies had been founded and established already when King Charles I was beheaded. They knew what was taking place very intimately, and it was part of their understanding as they declared independence, that they were doing so based upon clear evidence in history that they had the right to resist a king who was acting above the law, who was tyrannically abusing his powers. Now, when we come to the colonial era and take a look at what took place there, it's very interesting to see that each of the colonial charters of all 13 colonies included this precious right to a trial by jury. For example, the very first charter was Virginia, and that we just celebrated this past May, the 400th anniversary of the chartering of Virginia. King James I put instructions for the government of the colony of Virginia that included this right to trial by jury. He said, all subjects in the colony should have and enjoy all liberties, franchises, and immunities within any of our dominions to all intents and purposes as if they had been abiding and born within this our realm or any other of our said dominions. So it was guaranteed in the Virginia Charter that everyone born in that colony as well as a resident of that colony had the guarantee of the Englishman's right to a trial by a jury of his peers. When we look at the Massachusetts Bay Colony, we see a very similar structure of guarantee.
Hold that thought, David. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and everybody, how far we've gotten away from this idea of a trial by jury, where the jury determines the law, the jury determines whether the person is innocent or guilty, and of course, the judges don't like that today. The judges want to be able to control things and make everything run efficiently, and there is an establishment, there always is in every community, and you get to be a judge because usually you're a good old boy, you go along with the system, you don't rock the boat, doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, you go along with the system. And, of course, the last thing they want is people who are going to stand up and say, look, this isn't the way it should be. I mean, traditionally, the jury could nullify the law. They had the right to nullify a law if they felt it was basically wrong. And yet today, our juries are told, you're not allowed to look at the law. You will do what the judge says. And a lot of innocent people who the jury knows are innocent are sent to prison for indefinite periods of time because the judge says, look, you got to find them guilty. You have to find them guilty. Now, obviously, they must have done something wrong if charges were brought against them. You know, you could find them just very minimally guilty, but you got to find them guilty. And then once they've been declared to be guilty of anything at all, the judge can send them to jail for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, as they did in the case of the Branch Davidians, where, of course, I talked to the woman who headed that jury, Sarah Blaine, and her remark was the wrong people were on trial. The government should have been on trial. But to cover that up, why they sent those poor, unfortunate people to prison for 40 years. Fortunately, most of them are out by now. I think they're all out of prison. But they couldn't let the American people know that the Special Forces unit had gone in and killed the women and children and assassinated the people within the compound. This was simply a mass murder carried out by Special Forces, but they were just following their orders, weren't they? I mean, after all, when you're in the military and you're given an order and they're Delta Force, you do what you're told to do. Well, of course, a lot of those people were sent off to Somalia afterwards, and of course, a lot of them died there in the fighting in Somalia, because that's what's happened. Dead men tell no tales. But we do have a wonderful DVD on Waco. It's called Waco, A New Revolution, and people from the Delta Force tell about what they were told about what really happened. But, of course, you're never going to hear this discussed on CBS, ABC, or NBC. Under any circumstances, the jury must be paramount. The jury must have the ability to judge not only the guilt or innocence, but the law itself, because that is how it is a check on the power of an unscrupulous state, on the check on the power of unscrupulous politicians, those who, in my estimation, very often save a different God. Serve a different God. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Pastor David Whitney. And David, I'd like you to go ahead and why don't you get your webpage out, your telephone number, and tell people what will happen if they do get in touch with the Institute and the Constitution, if they do get one of your packets.
Yes, we encourage people to get a host kit, which gives you an ability to communicate the truths of what our founders believed about law and government and give a working knowledge of the Constitution, the Declaration, and Bill of Rights. And by the way, to serve as a fully informed juror, you need to know those, because we're talking about the jury's judging the law. You need to know what the standard is, the yardstick that you hold up against the law to determine if it's right or wrong. And that yardstick, of course, is our U.S. Constitution. And so our host kit is designed in a way that anybody can take this material, teach themselves, their family, the circle of friends, especially their church and fellow church members, and then wider circle of people in their community. And it's designed really to be a turnkey way, that the DVDs are excellent teaching by Constitutional Professor John Eismo, and a student notebook and a host manual that gives the host everything they need to conduct the course. And they can order this online if they go to our website, which is IOTC, standing for Institute on the Constitution, IOTConline.com. And right at the top of the first page, there is a button you can click to order a host kit. Or if you prefer to order by a phone rather than going online to our web store, you can call us toll-free at Institute on the Constitution, and that toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. And we urge every one of your listeners to take the host kit and educate themselves and as many people as they possibly can. If you hope to have justice for yourself when you are dragged into court in a jury trial, you need to have people in your community who understand the standard, the U.S. Constitution, and are equipped to judge the law as well as the facts in your case. And if you're not going to do this in your community, you can expect the kind of injustice that we see currently prevailing in our court systems to just continue. Because unless we, the people, stand up and resist tyranny, as they did in England with King Charles I, and as they, our founders did with King George III, unless we stand up and resist the abuse of our rights by a tyrannical government, we can expect to have no one to protect us when it comes to us being abused. And so I urge every listener to go to our website, iotconline.com, order a host kit, or call us toll-free and order a host kit during regular business hours here on the East Coast. And that toll-free number, again, is 866-730-9796.
All right, and I think it's important to realize that these host kits are going out all across the country, and you put out really thousands of these across the country in the last, how long have you been in business?
We've been doing this for 9 years now.
All right, fine. Well, it's really exciting to know that they're out there across America, and people are learning about the Constitution. And, of course, that is the basis, the foundation of our freedom. And until the American people demand that we get back to the law of our land and bring the lawbreakers who are in government before the bar of justice, they have usurped their power. They have taken away our government. They have taken away our freedom. What we need to do is reestablish our form of government. We don't need a revolution. Mm-hmm. We have this structure of government. We just need to insist that our elected representatives abide by the oath that they swear, when, of course, they swear to uphold the Constitution and defend it from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we got an awful lot of domestic enemies of the Constitution in Washington, D.C.
today.
Right. Go right ahead, David.
Well, in Massachusetts Bay Colony, there was a guarantee of trial by jury as early as 1628, very, very soon after that colony was founded. When we look at the first kind of constitution there of that colony, the Massachusetts Body of Liberties that was put together in 1641, we find in Article 29 that in all actions at law, it shall be the liberty of the plaintiff and the defendant by mutual consent to choose whether they be tried by the bench, that is by the judge, or by a jury. And that like liberty shall be granted to all persons in criminal cases. So both criminal and civil cases, you had a right and a guarantee to trial by jury. And it's very interesting. We've been talking about the standard, the ultimate standard being our Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. But behind that and above that is actually God's Word. And the Massachusetts Body of Liberties recognizes that when it says, this is Article 1, very beginning of the Body of Liberties, no man's life shall be taken away, no man's honor or good name shall be stained, no man's person shall be arrested, restrained, banished, dismembered, or in any way punished. No man shall be deprived of his wife or children or his goods or estate taken away from him, nor in any way damaged under color of law, unless under virtue of express law of the country, warranting the same established by the general court and sufficiently published, or in case of defect of a law. In other words, they recognize we might make a mistake when we create a law. In case of defect of a law, in a particular case by the word of God. They recognize that the Bible, God's word, was the ultimate law book, that it was even above the Constitution. It was the supreme law of the universe. And if they, in Massachusetts, created a law that violated the supreme law of the universe, God's word, the Bible, it was not legal. It was not true law and should be struck down by a jury of one's peers. And so I find that a fascinating comment there in Article 1 of the Massachusetts Body of Liberties, that they clearly recognize that God's law given to us in His Word, the Bible, was supreme, and it was to be the ultimate measuring stick against any human law as to whether that human law was actually just or unjust.
And you know, I think it's so interesting David, that today any mention of the fact that our laws originally were to be based upon the Bible, that everyone acknowledged we were a Christian nation. You didn't have to be a Christian. Certainly no denomination would run this country, but the law, the Bible was to be the foundation of our laws. Today this is never taught in schools. Nothing about the foundation of this country is taught in schools, because there are wicked people who want to change the structure of our government. And, of course, they wanted to convince us we're a democracy, that we were not a Christian nation. That's why they're God and prayer out of our schools. You can't even discuss this element in our schools today, because you might contaminate the children, and they might learn the truth and would not be willing to go along with the planned dictatorship that is coming. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for Pastor David Whitney, but David, you go right ahead with the story.
Let me just cite another colony, West New Jersey. New Jersey was originally not one state. It was two separate colonies, East and West. Well, the concessions and agreements of West New Jersey in 1677 said that no proprietor, freeholder, or inhabitant of the said province shall be deprived or condemned of life, limb, liberty, estate, property, or in any ways hurt in his or their privileges without a due trial and judgment passed by 12 good and lawful men of his neighborhood first. And all causes to be tried, persons reign except in the said any of the neighborhood without reason rendered, in any case, a valid reason alleged against the person nominated for that service. So, again, a guarantee of trial by jury, and the jury had to be good people of your vicinity, that is, of your neighborhood. These are people who would understand the conditions surrounding the alleged crime and so on. These are people who may even know you because they're familiar with the people in that area. And then one final one, let me just mention, because of a very interesting historical perspective, is the frame of the government of Pennsylvania. And this is interesting because William Penn in England had his rights severely abused by the king, and a trial by jury that we'll talk about a bit later, where the jury was also abused, where the government tried to manipulate the jury to do what the government wanted it to do, say that William Penn was guilty, and the jury refused to do so, and there was a very interesting battle that took place. Well, William Penn, having his God-given rights violated there in England, was more than eager to immigrate to this land and form a colony. And so when he formed the frame of the government of Pennsylvania, he said that in all trials shall be by 12 men, and no mention here of a judge, that the jury is really the one driving force in the courtroom, as near as may be peers or equals and of the neighborhood, men without just exception in all cases of life. There shall be 24 returned by the sheriff. So they demanded a jury of 24 for a capital trial of a capital crime, and shall find the complaint to be true. And then the 12 men or peers to be likewise returned by the sheriff shall have final judgment, but reasonable challenges shall always be admitted against the said 12 men or any of them. So a guarantee of trial by jury was part of every single colony. Alexander Hamilton, for example.
Oh, let's go to Gay, who's calling from Flint, Michigan. We've got a couple of people calling in there, and I think people should be interested in this subject. Gay, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I did.
Go right ahead, Gay.
Pastor Whitman.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, how would one go about bringing a protestation against the machines of, cameras of observation? They've had them in our neighborhood.
Oh, you're talking about the video cameras that are watching the people?
Yes, they've had them in our neighborhood before they even let the public know. Now they're openly saying that they're going to put them basically all over the place.
Well, of course, this is basically what George Orwell described in his book 1984. This is the plan for the dictatorship, but they justify this under the name of where we're trying to protect the people, from the criminal element.
This is what they're saying, and then they have a black representative to come forward, one in the leadership in the black community to front this program so that, they bring on the leadership so that the people will go along with it.
Well, let's get Pastor Whitney's thoughts on that, yes. Because don't you see this as a move towards the police state we've been talking about?
It certainly is, and what you have here is that most of these cameras are under the control of the executive branch, perhaps through the sheriff's office or the police or
yes.
so forth, but they're under the executive branch. What you have is the executive branch violating our God-given right to privacy, and that has to be checked by the legislative branch. The legislative branch needs to basically strip those from the police themselves. Usually it's a case, and I know it is here in Maryland, where the federal government has given enormous, millions upon hundreds of millions of dollars, for example, here in Baltimore, it's just covered. Every corner of the city has these cameras, and they have facial recognition software that are attached to them, and oh, just egregious violations. But anyway, it often comes from the federal government giving a huge pile of money to the local municipality to put up all these cameras. The check should be that the legislative branch says, no, we're not only going to refuse that money, that the executive branch cannot take this money from the federal government, and we're going to force the executive branch to take down all of those cameras. And so you ought to go to your representatives on the state level and perhaps on the city level, be the county city council, state representatives as well should have the power not only to stop this but to strip those cameras away.
Well, I think, of course, Gay, the only good thing maybe is the government's going to run out of money and not have enough money to fund it, and they're not going to have enough money to have people sitting there watching those video screens all the time. What we need to do, Gay, primarily is to get people to understand we're moving towards a dictatorship, an electronic dictatorship where everybody's monitored. Please help us reach the people there in Flint, as many people as you can, until the people understand nothing's going to change.
I am trying, because every several years, there are sweeps through the community,
right.
Arrest sweeps, and they're just arresting the young, mostly black or Puerto Ricans.
Right.
And also, you know, we're here now where the teenagers are graduating, and they know they'll have no job. They can't get any job.
You're absolutely right. And I tell you what, if you've listened to us long, Gay, you know that they're intensively targeting the blacks. And, of course, they're putting fluoride in the water, knowing full well
yes.
that the blacks are going to get a much higher level of lead
There's
in their blood and in their minds. And this is one reason for the rage and the fact that the blacks act irresponsibly, but they're being intensely poisoned. And
yes.
anybody who needs to want the background of that, the work by Dr. Roger Masters back at Dartmouth University. Gay, we're going to have to let you go, but help us reach the people. Until the people understand and fear the government, why, of course, we will not have our freedom returned. God bless, and
thanks so much.
Let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. Back to the Star Chamber part of the discussion.
Right.
Earlier. That sounds remarkably like a Masonic temple.
Well, yes, their Masonic imagery was part of what they were doing, and I don't know how many direct connections there is between Masonry and the Star Chamber, but there are elements certainly there.
But were they actually holding court in Masonic temples, that being their place?
This was one specific chamber. Go ahead.
Right, and this was one place in England that wasn't all over as the Masonic temples are.
And besides that, this was before the time of Masonry. Remember, Masonry wasn't established until 1711. This was prior. But, of course, we could, of course, trace Masonry back long before its origin, back to the ancient mystery religions.
The starry ceilings could have predated the dating of Freemasonry in England.
Yeah. Right.
Easily.
And in fact, maybe that's where the Masons got the idea.
Anybody listening is curious, in Morals and Dogma, page 209, there's a brief chapter on it, and I think anywhere on the net, if they type in Star Chamber or a Masonic Temple, they can find images of that type of a ceiling. It's
mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It represents, it incorporates elements of the zodiac and astrological symbols.
Right, because the occult foundations are so much of what's gone on in the past and too much of what's going on in government. People don't understand. There are two forces in our world. One is the Christian, and the other is the occult. And believe me, right now the occult are the most dominant. Now, this isn't to say that God isn't in control. I think he's just allowing us to dig a deeper hole. And what do you do when you find yourself in a hole? You don't keep digging, but that seems to be what we're doing.
Now, Mr. Federer was describing the injustice that took place under such a ceiling, if I was hearing correctly. Is that true?
Yes.
Right. Okay, fine. Anything else, Mike?
Well, that's just interesting. This is a demonic system, and that's where injustice occurs.
Amen to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Okay, fine. That was Mike. Well, our guest this evening is, of course, been Pastor David Whitney. David, I want you to get your address and your telephone number out one more time. I should say your web, right, and then, of course, we've got Jack calling, but we'll get to him in just a moment. Go ahead.
Yes, our website at Institute on the Constitution is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. And our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796.
And I think it's so vitally important that if you care about America, you care about your freedom, you've got to help us re-educate the American people and make them realize what a wonderful form of government we have. And how we must retain it, because any effort to overthrow the government would destroy the foundation of our Constitution. The Constitution is still the law of the land, no matter what some people on the Supreme Court will tell you. And the media will tell you. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program with Pastor David Whitney. Well, Jack, did you have a question for our guest?
I do, Dr. Stan. Let's see. Well, he tweaked my interest when he mentioned about no man's person being arrested. And in the body of the Federal Charter of the Constitution, such as the 13th and 14th Amendment, it says such and such, and then comma, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So I got to thinking, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, since 1933 and 38, when FDR declared bankruptcy by executive order, which was a treasonous act, but I read that it placed us under international commercial law.
All right, fine. Let's get David's response to that. Are we under international commercial law, or are we under the Constitution?
There are people who want to operate under that, but they do not have the legal grounds for doing so. In other words, there's many claims that we're under martial law, that, you know, martial law has been declared and it's not been rescinded. If that's the case, and I'm not necessarily debunking that it's the case, I'm saying that that is illegal because the supreme law of our land is still the United States Constitution.
And
the fact that Washington, D.C. doesn't obey the Constitution doesn't change the fact that it is still the supreme law of the land.
And, of course, we can go back to the War Powers Act. They've passed a number of these, enacted them by executive decree. Yep. And they say, oh, my goodness, we're subject to that. Yep. But the thing is that these people are violating our Constitution, and there should be a moral outrage on the part of the people saying, we're not going to put up with it. Don't you agree, Jack?
Well, yes, absolutely, Dr. Stan.
And I think what we have to do is get, in fact, we cover so much of this in our talk on the planned police state, and we actually show you the documents, some of them from our Senate, going back to 1972 or 73. Our senators were really very, very concerned about this excess regulation and the fact that we were operating on unconstitutional laws, and they wanted to restrict the power of the executive branch of government to establish a dictatorship. And this is what's so important. You need to read these government documents going back to the 1970s. A parting thought before we let you go, Jack?
I want to thank you for having Pastor Whitney on, and I'm going to do my best to organize a group, that's for
great.
Sure.
Thank you, Jack, for doing that, because that is the way back. If Americans understood what our Constitution really says,
absolutely,
and they demanded that their legislators and the executive branch and the judicial branch abide by the supreme law of the land, we can take our country back from the tyrants who are in control.
Amen to that. Thanks so much for calling, Jack. And Pastor Whitney, thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you with us again on this station, next month. Next month's almost here. God bless.
God bless. Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty. And, of course, we've got a little pamphlet we have. It's called The let's see, we are a republic's the title of it. We are a republic. They're inexpensive. We actually have a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. We recommend, of course, the work that the Institute of the Constitution is doing. We have a great book called Betrayed by the Bench by John Stormer, talking about what the Supreme Court has done and how wicked people on that court have actually changed the structure of our society. But that doesn't mean it's changed. The law is not what the Supreme Court says. It is not the tradition that the Supreme Court has set out of the presidents. It is the Constitution of the United States. And what we need are people sitting on the Supreme Court who believe in that. Now, of course, one of the best exposés of how this works and why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. Why did they take God and prayer out of our schools? Well, you need, of course, to read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, a book we carry. In fact, we have the only supply of it called Unholy Alliances, Unholy Alliance, and then another book called Behind the Lodge Door by Paul Fisher. We've kept these in stock for a long time. They're very important books. And, of course, I believe Unholy Alliance is very important. And we're probably down to about a case of those. We'll probably have to increase the cost of them. Because, of course, we have the only world supply, and when they're gone, they're gone. But I think a very, very important book by a good friend of ours, I really believe because he wrote that book, he came under a tremendous spiritual attack, destroyed his family, destroyed his life, but he was a very courageous individual, James Wardner. We'll have to get him back again here sometime soon. Well, our telephone number, if you'd like to get the items I mentioned, the pamphlet on We Are a Republic, the book, Betrayed by the Bench, a four-tape set, The Foundations of Our Freedom. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. The telephone number you'd want to call to get that. The items I mentioned was 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have about 4-800 numbers on the various networks we do, but the 1-800-544-8927 is a way to reach us, and please don't call the 888 number if you want to reach us, because there's nobody here, and you're simply calling the station or the answering machine at the station. If you want to talk to a live person, and I always enjoy talking to live people. I certainly don't want to talk to dead people, but it's in the telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Let me simply mention, if you have not yet seen my talk on the forbidden secret and gotten a syllabus, you need to. Our talk on the secret knowledge, you need to. Our talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that, which is very important, they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Or here in the Central Coast of California, basically you're going to still have to call that 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And there you're going to, of course, be able to see a lot of our videos that are posted there for free. We have another section called Other Videos, and there are links to very important websites. You're going to see a lot of these short YouTube programs that will give you in just a few minutes a great deal of information. So we're getting a growing collection of those. At radioliberty.com under Other Videos. Then let me suggest our newsletters, and I think they're a wonderful source of information. We agonize over them every month. If you want to understand this whole idea of peak oil and or running out of oil, and that's why the reason the price was going up, you need to read my two articles on peak oil, and you will find them at radioliberty.com. And just scroll on down to September and October of the year 2005. That's September and October of the year 2005. And read peak oil and the myth of peak oil. Understand it's all a scam, ladies and gentlemen. There really are wicked people who run the world from behind the scenes. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, pray for our leaders, our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend, Dr. David Kennedy, who is a dentist. He's retired now. He spends most of his time trying to educate people about the dangers of fluoride and mercury. But, of course, we're going to be talking this evening about some of the interesting things that have come up recently and some of the court cases. You're never going to hear about them, of course, in the controlled media. But most people don't understand they're poisonous with aluminum. They put it in, certainly in all of the vaccines. They all have aluminum there. Aluminum's a toxic metal, and it affects the brain. And then, of course, the lead. Anytime we actually put hydrofluor salicylic acid in our drinking water, and that's about 90% of the communities that where they actually are fluoridating the water, and they fluoridate the water in about 67, 68% of our communities. In those areas, why the lead, the blood level of lead goes up, we don't know why, but it does. And lead, of course, is one of the most toxic substances known to mankind. And it's in the drinking water, in the areas where they're putting the hydrofluor salicylic acid in. Certainly they're poisoning our children with aspartame. They're poisoning us with aspartame. They're poisoning our troops with depleted uranium. They're poisonous with genetically modified food. They're poisonous with certainly the fluoride in our drinking water. And they know exactly what they're doing. There's many of the food colorings and the scenting things that they put into our products are toxic, and many of them are carcinogenic, and that's one reason, of course, why we have such a dramatic increase in cancer, and the treatments for cancer are being very effectively suppressed in America today. And you say, why would anybody do anything like that? And it's simply because we're dealing with people who have a different worldview, who have no human compassion at all. And that is why they've effectively suppressed many of the cancer treatments used in other countries, totally unavailable here in the United States. But let's get back to the subject of water fluoridation and of mercury. And with us, Dr. David Kennedy. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you for having me on.
Well, tell us one of the latest things that are coming up. Tell maybe you're, I'm sure, well acquainted with this this court decision where the FDA was instructed to come up with new regulations on mercury in fillings and dental fillings, pointing out that this is toxic and damaging to people.
The FDA was ordered in 1978 to stop grandfathering these dental materials and classify them as safe and effective, or take them off the market. And the FDA said, I'll get right on that, boss. And that, you know, 32 years later, or 30 years later, they're still dragging their feet. And so Consumers for Dental Choice sued them. They said, here's an organization, a government agency, that has had 30 years to do what Congress ordered it to do, and it hasn't. And so it's basically in contempt of Congress. And the judge in Washington, D.C. agreed. And she said, you've got two choices. Either you can classify or get a specific date to classify dental amalgam, or I'll give you a specific date to classify amalgam by. And the FDA agreed. They sat down with Charlie Brown and from Consumers for Dental Choice, and they worked out a time. That within a year's period of time, we will have a classification. The dentists who control the FDA are going to try to classify it as Class 2. They've already been told by the head of the FDA 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they can't do that. So we're going to have to sue them again. But, you know, it's like fishing.
I think you ought to start in suing the dentist, David. That's the only way you're going to...
Well, you know...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. David, go right ahead.
There have been lawsuits against dentists, and there's actually been a lawsuit from a dentist against the manufacturers. Dr. Barnes in, I think it was Illinois, said, sued the manufacturers of the amalgam he used from the day he graduated from dental school. He said, oh, this is a good product, I'm going to use it. And he used it until he got mercury poisoned. And that he said, well, nobody ever told me that, you know, the practice of dentistry could destroy my health or in my body. And so he sued him. And that they got all the way to court, and the court said, well, did you read the material safety data sheet? It comes into your office with a skull and crossbones. It says opening this package can poison you. And, you know, when you ship out the hazardous waste material, you know, you have to send it in a sealed container to the toxic waste dump. They could not imagine what more the manufacturer could have told Dr. Barnes.
Well, then I think maybe we ought to start suing the dentist, because, of course, they're the ones, if they don't read the document there and they don't know what they're putting in people's mouths, it's toxic. And all you need to do is get one or two suits, large suits against dentists, and you hate to think of it happening, but, you know, they are complicit in this whole thing, and if they don't understand what they're doing, why, of course, they're still doing an awful lot of damage.
We've got a new wrinkle. That this last, in California, this last week, that we petitioned the Occupational Health and Safety Standards Board to protect employees. There are now dozens of studies showing dental assistants and dentists are impaired, damaged, their health is destroyed. In 17% of them who are CPOX positive are severely impaired. Now, this is not good. And that's because mercury comes off the filling every time you mix it. And that they get a puff of a really high level. Well, California has a ceiling limit that's never to be exceeded under any circumstances of 100 parts per million. When you mix amalgam, you get over 1,000. 10 times higher than the legal limit, not for daily average exposure, it's the runaway and flee. And that's when you get a new mercury filling. That everybody should flee when they mix the thing. So we went to the OSHA Standards Board and said we'd like a standard to protect dental assistants, because obviously they're being injured, and there's peer-reviewed scientific studies showing that. And they looked at it, and they hemmed and hawed, and they said, well, you don't need a new standards, because the standards we have today don't allow that. He said the problem is of enforcement, and that's called DOSH, Department of Occupational Health and Safety. DOSH is not enforcing the law, and so...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, David was pointing out that dental assistants, really, of course, they have all sorts of problems. What sort of problems do they have? We know that the incidence of certainly infertility and miscarriage is much higher in dental assistants. What are the symptoms of dental assistants working in dentist's office where they're putting in fillings? What other sort of problems do they have?
Oh, all kinds of stuff like memory loss, inability to synthesize two thoughts, fertility. Their fertility is reduced by 40%. Their birth defects are increased by more than double. There's just a whole host of health problems. And if you track these women for another 20 to 30 years, they have something like a doubling of the number that have hysterectomies. There's a fourfold increase in women with menstrual disorders. So, you know, it's destroying the health of the women that work in dentistry. Men also suffer, actually even more in some ways, because they're the ones that are most severely neurologically impaired. Is it if you have, and who wants a dentist whose hands shake, whose hands are so fumbly? I mean, they select the ones that are the best, and that by the time they get in dentistry for 20, 30 years, they're the worst. And that's because of mercury. So there's a way to correct this. There are laws against this. And I would encourage everybody that's listening who knows a dental assistant to go talk with her and or him and see if they have suffered from any of these symptoms. I've had six children born to women that were rendered infertile by their occupational exposure to mercury. When we got them out of a mercury environment, got them into my office, which was mercury-free, got the mercury fillings out of their teeth, and then all of a sudden they started becoming fertile again. And that's without other interventions. That's just, you know, like
take him out of a toxic workplace. So DASH is called, if you went on the internet and typed in Occupational Health and Safety or OSHA, DASH, D-O-S-H, you will come across their webpage, and it says, you know, stuff like how to file a health and safety complaint, which is the fourth one down on the left-hand side. That is what every dental assistant that's been injured should do, or especially if they're still working in a toxic environment, because DASH will be there in 2 weeks. Now, why is this important? Is that they can't open the capsule of amalgam legally in the state of California without giving you a mask, without putting a vacuum and a fan beside the material to suck the material out of the area and protecting you with gloves and a gown. So, and then they have to record the levels of mercury, and they have to keep it in a logbook along with a written informed consent that says, "Dear Miss Jones, your occupational exposure to mercury may cause infertility and birth defects, which is known to the state of California." And that I would add that they also need to tell you that you may become, if you continue to work here, neurologically impaired. Please sign here. And if that's not in the notebook, it's called the HAZCOM, Hazardous Communications Act. If that's not in that notebook, they're guilty. And that's the lawsuit. You know, you mentioned lawsuits. There are lawsuits, and you go to court, and it's like a crapshoot. You know, you throw the dice, and it may come up snake eyes, and you may win a zillion dollars. If any dentist practicing in the state of California doesn't have measurements of his office or her office, and the levels of mercury in that office recorded, and informed consent telling everybody that's going to be involved that they may become infertile, have birth defects, have hysterectomy later in life, and neurological impairment, if there isn't a signed informed consent since 1987, this is not new law, then they're guilty.
But, of course, they refuse to enforce these laws because, of course, they don't want to discourage dentists. Do you think that the dentists really understand what they're doing and they're doing harm? Or do you think that they're just, are they doing what they've always been taught to do? Well, how are we going to get to the dentists and get them to begin to realize that they're poisoning their patients?
Dr. Stan, it's just exactly like a wolf chasing a caribou. Is it when one wolf runs at the crowd of caribou, they all run the other direction. And so all that has to happen is one poor dentist with one injured dental assistant gets caught by DASH, and then they rip his guts out, and they strip his skin off, and they eat him right there in front of all the rest. All the caribou are going to run in the opposite direction, and that's exactly what will happen in 2 weeks.
All right, well, tell us what's going to happen.
It's not a question that the California Dental Occupational Health and Safety Department of Industrial Relations doesn't want to enforce the law. They said they will enforce the law if they get a complaint in 2 weeks. It's not going to take a month or a year or a decade. In 2 weeks, if any dental assistant or dentist who works for another company feels that they've been injured by mercury and that they don't have a written informed consent, and a whole serial measurements for decades of the amount of mercury that they've been exposed to, the employer is guilty. DASH will come in and levy fines, close the place down, make them clean it up, and start measuring. That will happen, and that's just the same as a wolf eating a caribou. Cool. Is all the other caribou going the other direction?
Well, now, Kirsten, is there any files, any complaints that have been filed? That's the problem.
That is the problem. Because what happens when the woman gets sick, she gets fired. You know, you're out of a job. You go home, you get well. When you get well, come on back. Dentists don't have, you know, paid sick leave and stuff like that. It's a little bitty business. It's got two or three employees. Well, if you got two employees and one of them's sick, what are you going to do? Hire another one. And that I had a lady work for me years ago. I didn't know what it was, but she had what's called torticollis. She had a muscle in her neck that would spasm and contract. Well, that is one of the symptoms of mercury poisoning. She was working not in my office, but in another office, and she'd got a big dose of mercury, and she didn't know it, but, she had to quit dentistry. She manages an apartment complex, you know, a mile from where I live now. And, you know, She didn't know what was causing it. That's why it's so important that you have us on tonight, because I'm telling her, if you have any of the symptoms of mercury poisoning, which are, you know, memory loss and menstrual problems, in males, it's a neurological impairment. You know, their hands are not steady. How can you tell? If you pick up a 3-pound weight and hold it at a right angle to your body, how long can you hold it before you begin to tremor? Well, excuse me, a healthy person can hold that for several minutes. A dentist can hold it for, you know, maybe a minute or two. And the staff are the same. That is damage to the nerves that instruct that arm to stay stiff. So these are very measurable things. And when Woods and Echevarria published in the scientific literature and measured dentists, they found that if they're releasing a porphyrin in their urine, that they are neurologically impaired. So you can give a urine sample. They can analyze it for what's called a coporphyrinogen, and that if you got that, you are mercury poisoned. It's not a question. It's not debatable. Nothing else causes this porphyrin to come out. And so now there are scientific studies that can be done on somebody that thinks they might even be poisoned, and it'll tell you slam dunk, yes or no. It's like DNA testing. Is it, you know, 20, 30 years ago, he said, well, we don't know who did this terrible crime. You know, we got a little bit of blood from the evildoer. We don't know who it is. Today, if you got hair from the evildoer, you can say, well, that's one chance in a billion that it's got to be Tom Jones right here, this guy right here. It's got to be that guy. And so the same thing's true of mercury poisoning. You can prove who is and who is not mercury poisoned.
Well, certainly, has there been any effort to actually educate the dentists? You know, the dentists are the first line of defense, and the thing is that they've been taught one thing in dental school, and it's a lie. Has there been any effort in even one area to actually convince the dentists of the great harm they're doing and the danger they're in? My understanding is that the incidence of suicide among dentists, which represent, I think, certainly psychological problems or mental problems, is much higher in dentists than certainly in the general population. Is that true?
Absolutely. And that there are four dental associations, five medical associations, that are doing exactly what you're talking about. But unfortunately, these meetings are attended by 200 to 300 dentists. The International Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology twice a year offers a course in biological dentistry. The Holistic Dental Association, the International Academy of Biological Dentistry, the Orthomolecular Medical Society, the American Academy for the Advancement of Medicine, the American Environmental Medical Association, all those organizations are offering courses annually, and that mercury is almost always a topic at these meetings because it's a common problem. So, but if you want to watch why the dentists are so deceived, I put up a new YouTube video, and it's called Poison in Your Dentist Office, and I call it PIDO, Poison in PIY. Dentist office. Poison in your dentist office. If you go into YouTube and either search under poison, you'll get a lot of my videos because I usually start them with poison, and look under David Kennedy and watch the latest one. It's not quite, you know, as polished as some of my past ones because I had to do it in 2 days, but poison your dentist office and you'll get to watch the lady from the California Dental Association, and that the Occupational Health and Standards Board is asking her questions, such as, you know, well, do you tell the dentist that they need to monitor their facility? And she says, oh, glutaraldehyde and this and that, one thing and another. And they said, well, let's focus back here on mercury. And she said, mercury? Mercury? What about mercury? I haven't heard anything about mercury. Is mercury a problem? There's not a splash. We haven't heard. It's not on our radar. We haven't heard anything about mercury. And you go to the website, not a word. So this is the major dental association. And she, what's her job? Her job is to advise dentists in the state of California how to comply with the occupational health and safety. So it's really no wonder why they aren't in compliance.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back here with David Kennedy. All All right, David, we'll go right ahead. Now, I should comment, of course, that David's got some excellent other DVDs. Do you have any, Christy, we've seen all of those that you have on fluoride. Do you have any other on mercury DVDs or YouTube presentations?
Well, yes and yes and yes. Mercury DVDs, I just posted a new one on YouTube, which is called The Beautiful Truth. We have a DVD called Smoking Teeth. That I think you have at your...
Yes, we do. We carry that
you
one.
You carry that. The Beautiful Truth is the Smoking Teeth. It was all about mercury coming off fillings. And that it just got all the dentists in an uproar, and they said, oh, that can't possibly be mercury. We know this material's safe. And that, you know, and look how, because you've heated that tooth, the mercury's rising. Mercury should fall because it's heavy. And that, you know, does hot air rise? Uh-huh. And so it's basically because we've heated the tooth. So after being really annoyed, they said, oh, it must be water. And so after being really annoyed for several years, that was in 2000, so this year we've posted The Beautiful Truth. And it was shot actually in not only with a video camera, but it's part of a bigger documentary by Steve Kroeschel called The Beautiful Truth. And it's all about alternative approach, the Gerson therapy for cancer and that sort of information, but he allowed me and gave me permission to post Dr. Eichmann's demonstration and my effort with the Jerome Mercury Sniffer to measure how much mercury is coming off these fillings. And, you know, and this time, instead of heating the filling, Dr. Eichmann scratched it with an instrument, and that what happens is mercury pours off the filling, but because the room is hot and Dr. Eichmann has not heated the tooth, the mercury falls. And so, as they said, you know, heavy metal should fall. It does. And that Dr. Eichmann takes his finger, sticks it in hot water, and then holds it in front of the screen and says, see no smoke, because water vapor doesn't show up under the lighting conditions that show mercury vapor. And then he mixes an amalgam capsule, like a new filling, and he doesn't even open the capsule. He just cracks it so that, you know, that the airtight seal is open. And then I'm standing at a right angle to it, so I can't really see where their plume is, but I say, you know, it must be somewhere around here, and I wander around with the mercury sniffer in and out of the plume a time or two, and I come up with a level that's 250 micrograms per cubic meter. In California, no place in the whole state can be over 100 micrograms and not have alarm bells go up, and you're supposed to flee the area. So here's an amalgam cap. They haven't pulled it out of the capsule and begun to pack it in people's teeth. That gets over 1,000 real quick. He's just cracked the capsule, and it's well over 250 micrograms, which is 2.5 times the flee the area level. And so that's the thing we pointed out to the Cal OSHA standards board, and they said, well, are they monitoring this facility? Do they have masks on? Do they have gloves on? You know, read standard 5155. They can't do that without adequate protection. So the law has already been on the books for since 73, 74. So dentists are breaking the law. And that what they have to do is, it's like speeders on the freeway. The highway patrol doesn't have to catch everybody. They just have to catch one or two a day. Stand them beside the freeway, you know, have them put their hands on the roof and then handcuff them and put them in the back of the patrol car and take them in and run them through the grinder. And that everybody else that's driving by says, whoa, I don't want that.
Hold that thought.
To
me. We'll be right back with it, David Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's David Kennedy. Well, certainly when I go to my dentist's office, why, he always wears a mask, and he always wears a, you know, a face mask, and so does his assistant. Now, is that standard procedure now because of the AIDS epidemic, or is that done in most dentist's office?
That is done in most dentist's office, but unfortunately, it's not in compliance with the laws of the state of California. Is it? That mask is meant to prevent what's called bloodborne pathogens. Is that, you know, if there's hepatitis or AIDS or some infectious material in the blood, that a paper mask or a cloth mask will stop that. Mercury vapor, or if you're grinding on a tooth, a particulate amalgam, actually goes right through a cloth mask. Is it the particle size? This is a study by Richardson. The particle size of the amalgam when you grind on it is about the same size as a cigarette particle. Who believes that you could have one of those face masks on, and if you'd just taken in a big lung full of cigarette smoke and you blew out, that mask wouldn't let the cigarette smoke right on out? Of course it would, because that mask is not designed for what are called small particle filters. So also, if you get particulate amalgam in that mask, that the amalgam will be heated up by the breath of the doctor or the assistant, and so it continues to release more mercury because it's stuck in your mask. This OSHA was very clear on, that wearing a bloodborne pathogen mask is not adequate.
And then what sort of mask would you should they be wearing?
Well, it actually looks kind of like a gas mask. You can get them at Home Depot. You can get the base of it. It's called the Mine Safety Association. Everybody abbreviates it MSA, Mine Safety Association. And then they have little tanks on the side that filter out mercury. And that they have a small particle filter that is an additional cost and an additional device that goes on it. And that there is a yellow and orange button on the mask itself, on the end of the filter. And so if you're inhaling mercury and that mask becomes clogged with mercury, for example, that filter changes color. And your partner, your assistant or your doctor, is supposed to look at you and say, your mask is clogged. Get out of here.
Well, does anybody really do this? I mean, it sounds great, but is anybody in the entire state doing it? I've never seen it.
Oh, yes. They're called the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology.
Okay.
The mercury-free dentists who are members of the IMT follow the protocols, by and large, unless there's somebody that's, you know, a little too mercury poisoned or something, I suppose. But that we've been teaching this technique for 20 years.
All right, fine. So basically, if they're not using one of these gas masks, it looks like almost like a gas mask, doesn't it, with the little dealies on either side.
Exactly. A little dealie on either side, and it's got an orange button on it that tells you whether it's plugged or not.
All right, fine. So, you know, certainly the dentist isn't in jeopardy when he's taking out a filling.
Absolutely. And what's so pathetic is that all these guys go to dental school, you know, and they're good people. They want to help people get well, and they're not mean, evil people, but they're lied to. They're lied to at the USC. They're lied to at UCLA. They're lied to at the University of Pacific. They're lied to from one end of the state to the other because all of those dental schools are accredited by a trade association that makes huge amounts of money from industry. And they said that the American Dental Association was sued in 1992 by a chiropractor, Hank Tolbert, who became mercury poisoned after somebody decided to adjust his bite. The guy went in and ground his bite down to, you know, make his TMJ happier with a diamond burr, and he inhaled the particles, and he ended up with what's called mercury pneumonitis, diagnosed by Stanford. It's not a question. The guy was mercury poisoned. Sued the dentist and the ADA. The ADA was dismissed from the lawsuit in San Francisco. They argued in court that they owe no duty of care to the public. We are a trade association. We represent the industry. We represent the dentist. We represent the manufacturers. We owe no duty of care to the public. And the court said, yeah, well, that's right. And they let them loose. So who accredits the dental school? That's the ADA. Who tells the dentist what courses they're supposed to take? Well, that'd be the ADA. Who gives them continuing education courses? Well, that'd be the ADA. That they claim that they owe no duty of care, and yet they have a stranglehold on the information that goes into the dental school and into the dentist's mind. So that's why the dentists are confused.
And I really think it's such a tragedy that I believe the dentists are being really betrayed by their own organizations. I certainly saw this within the California Medical Association when I was working with the hierarchy there. And they had an agenda. It was entirely different than the doctors. They wanted to bring the doctors under control. They wanted to destroy the practice of medicine. They wanted to impoverish the doctors. And what was their motivation? I don't know. But there was a small little clique that held the reins of power within organized medicine. I suspect the same is true within organized dentistry today. And our job is to get people to understand that they're poisoning us. Some people know what they're doing, and we've got to help them. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Dr. David Kennedy. We're talking about really the tragedy of so many Americans are being poisoned by the mercury fillings in their mouth. And, of course, there's certainly a causal relationship between mercury fillings and the onset of dementia and Alzheimer's disease in the elderly. And certainly, but Dr. Boyd Haley has dealt with that. Certainly, I have had all of my mercury fillings out, and we advise people to do that. What do you advise them? Do you advise people to get those mercury fillings out, David?
Well, yes and no. Here's the problem, is that if you watch Spoken Teeth, John Perlman, a physician, had a woman that was a triathlete. You know, she was 50 years old, tremendously fit, decided she didn't want to have any mercury fillings. The dentist went in and willy-nilly ground them out. She inhaled the fumes. She's now in a wheelchair with permanent Parkinson's. What happened is that there are huge amounts, I'm not talking a little bit, 750 milligrams of mercury in each filling, and that if you're not protected during the removal, you can get a huge dose. Even the manufacturer says that in the material safety data sheet that comes out with the material. I don't know. How can it be safe to go in and unsafe to take out? But anyway, instead of following the protocols of the IMT, which can remove these fillings safely, the dentist just went in and removed them, and she became permanently crippled. Another friend, John Wilson's a physician friend of mine in Asheville, South Carolina, and that he told me that a colleague of his, much younger, went in and said, well, you know, I think I'll get these mercury fillings out. And his friendly dentist said, well, here, have a seat. Ground him out, and he developed what's called idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy. People may not recognize that. It's the abbreviation is IDCM. And it's the disease that strikes all these abundantly healthy athletes, you know, that they're dribbling the basketball down the court and fall over dead. That's idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy. The heart just quits beating. It turns into pudding. And that he developed that within 2 weeks of having his fillings out. And this was an abundantly healthy physician. No history of any cardiac problem. And that he would have died had he not received a heart transplant. When you analyze his heart, he had 22,000 times more mercury in that heart. This is a study in Italy. Fascisci, who is an Italian researcher, 22,000 times more mercury in his heart than a heart that had died of a heart attack or somebody that had died of a car wreck. So what happened is that there is a huge amount of mercury in that filling. If you don't have some other way to breathe while that filling's being drilled out, and if the dentist doesn't put OSHA called it engineering control.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with David Kennedy. Well, it's a new Dr. Stan here. Dr. David Kennedy is telling us about a physician, very good health, and he gets his cavities taken out, but the dentist doesn't make any special precautions, and what happens is, of course, that within 2 weeks he's got the cardiac myopathy, hypertrophic cardiac myopathy, and of course he eventually ends up needing a heart transplant, and when they analyze his heart, why it's got, 20,000 times more mercury than 22,000 times more mercury. And, of course, what they did is simply poison him by taking his fillings out. And actually, I've talked to other people who have been permanently crippled because of improper removal of the mercury from their mouth. Now, I personally think you should get the mercury out, but I think you need to go to a dentist who knows what they're doing. And, of course, David can tell you how to do that. How would people go about finding a dentist that they can trust who will do a good job and not end up poisoning them and to be worse off?
Well, I would say, you know, go to the IAOMT website and look under your zip code or your area code, and then interview them. Not every, you know, just because they're on that website, they're listed if they've taken the course. They have an A after their name or accredited if they've taken the course and they've completed a test. They have a F after their name or for fellow if they've completed a test and then submitted cases, and then there's a master if they've done a lot of work. But I think I mispronounced the guy's name that did the study. It's Frustaci, Frustucci. I don't know how you say that. It's an Italian name, but it was published and you know this journal, Dr. Stan. It's the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. That study was published in 1999. 22,000 times more mercury in those hearts that suffered IDCM, It's idiopathic, which means I don't know what's happening. Dilated cardiomyopathy, and it's, you know, you could call it pudding heart, is that the heart fails to beat normally. And that if I took a perfectly healthy person and injected them with 22,000 times more mercury than is found in an ordinary heart, that it would kill the heart. This is, at some point, you have to start talking about what's called causation. And that mercury caused IDCM in this position, I am certain. And that this is not appropriate behavior for dentists. And that it's not known, it's just not known to dentists because it's a cardiology. And that if you have a heart attack in a dentist's office, that what the dentist's responsibility is to call 911. Is it the same as the janitor? Is that dentists are not allowed to treat, diagnose, or in any way interface with any other part of medicine. And I think that's the problem.
I think it is too. Well, before we go on, incidentally, I want to put our telephone number out. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. But right now, David, why don't you go ahead and get your website out and any other information you'd like to get.
Okay, well, the website that I'm, you know, if you're looking for a doctor or a physician even, that you go to the International Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology, and it's really simple. It's www.I as international, A as in academy, O as in oral, M as in medicine, and T as in toxicology, IAOMT.org. It's a nonprofit, and that they will be glad to, you can go on the website, or there'll be a phone number there that you can call them, you know, 7 to 4 or something like that. They're in Florida to get directions on how to get to a physician or a dentist, and you can even email questions. I ended up feeling, you know, we have a 24 physicians and dentists that field questions from people. You know, if they have questions about, you know, how, what's wrong here and what's wrong there, and you know, dentists don't give medical advice, but there's a lot of physicians in our academy. We'll be glad to tell you, you know, that, you know, here, you need to check for this, need to check for that. That's not against the law. You can give good advice to good friends. You do not have to remain silent when you think you may know what's wrong with somebody. You can give them good advice, and that's still legal in this country, at least for the time being.
Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I drive a tow truck, so I just stepped out of my truck. I guess you'd mentioned something about this, but I have a bunch of fillings I'd like to have pulled out of my teeth. I'm afraid that if any dentist does it, that, you know, I'll get mercury poisoning that way. How do they pull it out?
They grind it up, but what they do is they put a dam in the back of your mouth. They use a lot of suction, a lot of water, and, of course, they're protected themselves. And that dam keeps you from inhaling that, and but they have to have the suction and the water there to get that mercury out. If they just take them out without, you know, without the dam, and they get real trouble. Was there anything else you'd like to comment on that, David? Because you know this a lot more than an orthopedic surgeon who's...
Well, you're missing one step. They need a hose on your nose. Is it don't do this if you've got a cold, Dan.
Uh-huh.
You've got to be able to breathe through your nose. And if they put a hose on your nose that is supplying oxygen or air so that you can breathe entirely through your nose during the entire procedure, and that what the dentist, if they've taken the academy course and they're trained, what they do is they take a small burr, not a diamond. Diamonds makes particles that are so small that you just can't pick them all up. But a burr makes, you know, chunks. And they cut the filling into two pieces. And then you take it out in two chunks and put that in a hazardous waste container. And then you take a water hose spray, you know, like they use the little squirters.
Right.
But it all the heat's turned off and all the volume is turned up. And you just flush and flush and flush with a giant vacuum attached to the tooth. For the
full. So the white amalgam?
A big part?
It's the white amalgam that they're filling teeth with right now. Is there any problems with that?
Yes, there are. It's called a composite, and that there are brands of that composite that leak a product called the BPA, bisphenol A. Actually, it doesn't leak that. It leaks bisGMA, which is converted to BPA. But anyway, you want to use one that doesn't have BPA in it, and that the other problem is some of the manufacturers have begun to add fluoride to this product. Well, that ends up weakening the tooth, causing the enamel to fracture, poisoning the pulp in the tooth. It's absolutely insane to put a time-release poison in a tooth. The dentists like it because it makes it harder for the bacteria to live around the tooth. Well, do a better job of filling the tooth, and the bacteria won't be able to get in the tooth for the same reason they can't get into a natural tooth, because it'll be totally sealed up. That don't get a fluoride-releasing composite, and don't let them put one that has bis-GMA in it in your tooth. Those are my two caveats. Other than that, what you want to do is you want to find a dentist that is more knowledgeable than you are, and already, I'm sorry to say, you know more than about 95% of the dentists in the United States right now. Because
yeah, I have to argue a lot with my dentist.
Oh, true, but if you need a dentist, Mike, call me off the air, and I will give you the name of my dentist, who actually is a member of the International Association of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, and is really right up on this, okay?
You're a good guy, Stan, and my advice was, get another dentist. If you got to argue with them about how your care is going to be handled, get another dentist.
Okay, Mike, anything else?
All right. That's it. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Let's go to Mark, who's calling us from Flint, Michigan. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Mark. It's getting pretty late back there in Flint, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It's 12:41 a.m.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes. Good morning, Dr. Stan. It's first time calling. I have been dealing with a problem called atrial fibrillation since I was about 13 years old. That's been 33 years ago. I had my first filling at 12 years old. And over the last about 2-3 years ago, I learned that one of the things that might contribute to the atrial fibrillation is heavy metals in the system that collect and sort of pool in the heart muscle itself. What is going on inside my heart is over the years my heart has developed extra neural pathways, and what the healthcare specialist that told me about the heavy metals said due to possibly having heavy metals inside my heart muscle itself, that could cause pseudo neural pathways.
Oh, well, let's get Dr. Kennedy's thoughts on it. David, have you ever heard any relationship between auricular fibrillation or atrial fibrillation and presence of these cavities? And probably, of course, I suspect, Mark. How old are you, Mark?
I'm 46.
Well, you probably got the mercury vaccines then as well when you were growing up. So have you ever heard of any connection between auricular fibrillation and certainly the presence of mercury fillings?
Absolutely. And Mark, avoid the flu vaccine because it's still got a lot of mercury in it, too. They want to say, oh, we got all the mercury out. They didn't. They're just lying. But
I don't do flu vaccines.
Good. Good. I mean, if you get a regular flu vaccine, you grossly increase your risk of Alzheimer's disease. Thank you very much. But anyway, back to your heart. Is it when we, back in the 80s, we poisoned sheep and monkeys by putting mercury fillings in their teeth, and the mercury accumulated in the organs in the following order. It was in the kidney, liver, heart, brain, in that order. And so, why is the heart sucking up all this mercury? Is because they have a very specialized muscles in the heart that actually form as a nerve conduction, and they contain lots of sulfur. Mercury loves sulfur. So wherever there's sulfur, you're going to find mercury accumulated. So they did a survey of dentists years ago, and some of the dentists had such severe cardiac arrhythmias that they took one guy right from the American Dental Association meeting straight to the hospital because, his heart was beating so poorly, they thought he was going to die right there at the meeting. So, yes, it's associated with cardiac arrhythmias is what it's generally referred to, YouGov atrial fibrillation, thank goodness, because if it was ventricular fibrillation, you'd be dead.
So actually, I've had that three times.
Oh, you don't want that. That's very bad.
Fortunately, it was brief, and because the nurse was right on point, she instructed me to give a good hard squeezing cough and don't stop until she says.
That's right, because you can create your own cardiac massage, but we don't want you doing that. We want you to
right.
get here's the protocol for all poisonings, and it basically in this order: stop exposure, and encourage excretion. And so exposure is coming from diet, fish. If you're eating a lot of fish, that in Michigan, what are you eating? Catfish. So
I eat a little bit of catfish. Most of the should I eat. Is either walleye out of the Great Lakes north in northern Michigan or salmon.
So my advice is, well, salmon is probably not nearly as bad because it only lives to be 3 years old, unless it's a farm salmon, in which case it's really high in mercury because they feed the farm salmon other fish. So anyway, my advice is avoid fish and then seek out medical advice from some physician that is trained in chelating mercury from your body and get what's called a challenge test. And that's where they give you a dose of a chelator. It can be EDTA or DMPS or DMSA. There's three different drugs that they can give you. And then they measure how much comes out in the next 6 hours. And they can basically tell what you're poisoned with by what comes out when they hit you with these chelators. And then stop your exposure. That means you can get the a knowledgeable dentist or physician to remove your mercury fillings. You can get a physician to treat you for mercury poisoning if that's what comes out. It may be lead. Is it there? And the other thing that Stan and I haven't talked about tonight is there's ample evidence that lead and mercury work together to cause even worse problems than either one alone. A 1% lethal dose in animals, we can't do this in humans, but if you give a dose of lead that only kills 1 out of 100 animals, and you give a dose of lead that only kills 1 out of 100 with mercury, and you give that 1% lethal dose mercury and 1% lethal dose lead, you kill 100% of the animals. That means that lead and mercury work together to cause an even worse condition in the human being. So
synergistically, in the worst way.
You betcha. And so the solution is always the same with toxicology. Stop the exposure, encourage excretion. So what encourages excretion is that there are nutrients that you can buy over the counter at any health food store that help bind up the mercury. One of them is called selenium, that is absolutely essential to human health. It prevents cancer. There's a study years ago where done by Gerhard Schrauser at UCSD, where they gave an animal a carcinogen. 100% of the animals got cancer, and they said, oh, that's probably not a good thing. And then they gave them selenium, and then they gave them exactly the same amount of the carcinogen, only 1 out of 10 of the animals got cancer. They said, oh, selenium at low doses, not high doses, low doses apparently prevents cancer. So that's 30-year-old research. So why aren't you on a regular selenium diet? You know, that's available to every health food store. And that also binds up mercury. And so there are nutrients that contain sulfur, MSM, the amino acid cysteine, glutathione, all of those things bind up mercury. Get yourself into the office of a knowledgeable physician. If you go to the website, you'll find that physicians from the American Academy for the Environmental Medicine and the American Academy for the Advancement of Medicine, ACAM and AAM, all those organizations have had multiple lectures for, I know Dr. Vimy, the sheep dentist, was talking to the AAEM back in 1994. So, you know, they've had, you know, 20 years of lectures on what kinds of heavy metals come out of dental materials. And that's the thing that, there's a new thing that they just found that some dentists have been having dental work made in China, and they found that there's lead in it. And so, you know, like, send your dental work over to China, and what comes back is, you know, all the junk in China that the Chinese want to get rid of. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
But I think that one certainly you would want to definitely get rid of the mercury fillings, whether that's in any way related to your auricular fibrillation or not. One of the things that really does help, in addition to the selenium, that would be magnesium as far as the actually decreasing the hyperirritability of your heart. But you know, you're going to have to find somebody back there, and you go to the IAOTM, International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Find a dentist who knows what he's doing. Get rid of him. And then, of course, you can check and find out, you know, what your load is. They have means of doing that. That I think this idea of suddenly giving you one of the things that force excretion, you might be interested in what does come out. But
yeah.
I suspect...
And now, what was that, the excretion test you...
It's called a challenge test. It's in the physician's desk reference, which is the biggest, most frequently checked out book in the library. PDR is the abbreviation.
Right.
Physician's desk reference. And, you can look up under any of those ingredients how to challenge somebody. But get a good doctor to supervise this for you. This is a life-threatening condition.
We're out of time. Thanks very much.
I am going to do that tomorrow. Uh-huh. Thank you, doctor.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
Okay, fine. Have David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, let me just wrap up this this program this evening, saying, Stan.
David, are you there? Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to ask my producer to call David back again. So we just cut him off. But certainly David is sort of one of the leaders of this whole movement to try to educate people about the dangers of mercury and fluoride. He's put together some excellent DVDs, which we do carry because we think that both those are dealing with mercury and fluoride are so important. He's done a great job on it, and sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words, and so we recommend David Kennedy's DVDs, and that's the reason we carry them. We want you to have access to the information, and then, of course, we want you to be able to share it with others. Well, of course, our guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy, and, of course, hopefully we'll get him back. And David, what is your website? How can people get in touch with your material?
The International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology is my favorite organization, and that if you're there in California, that they should contact the Occupational Health and Safety, DOSH. That they're the ones that are going to inspect the dental offices. Let me give you a phone number for the IOMT in case somebody doesn't have a computer. It's 863-420-6373.
Well, let me just mention the websites, fluoridealert.org or .net.
That's on fluoride. We were talking about mercury tonight.
Right. And,
but yes, that's an excellent website, full of scientific references.
And we really need to get people to learn where you can go and get the information. And there's a great deal of information out there on mercury as well. Moms Against Mercury, certainly Charlie Brown's organization. These are people all across the country trying to get something done. The good thing I can say in California is they passed legislation that they cannot have mercury in the vaccines that they're giving here. And hopefully that will be followed through, and they will start prosecuting the companies that insist on leaving the mercury in to poison our people. David, one thought before you go. You got about 40 seconds.
I just want to say, thank you for having me on, Stan, and for the listeners, to be sure and stimulate your friendly dental assistant and your dentist employees to contact DOSH and get their office inspected. They have a whole program of helping bring dentists in compliance with the law, and that means masks, gloves, gowns, monitoring the facilities, accurate informed consent for all the employees, signed, dated, and in the book.
All right, fine. Well, God bless you. Thanks so
very
much, David.
Thank
Always
you.
A pleasure to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Bye-bye. And, of course, that's Dr. David Kennedy, certainly one of my favorite guests. I hope he's one of yours as well. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and, of course, talking about mercury. We actually have a couple of 4-tape sets on mercury. We have a number of DVDs on mercury. And, of course, we have our interviews with Dr. Boyd Haley talking about the relationship between fillings, dental fillings, and, of course, the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. There's no question that mercury and lead are two of the most toxic substances as far as the brain is concerned. Aluminum comes in third, or, of course, and fluoride somewhere right in the middle of that. We're poisoning our people, and this is why certainly we suggest that that you do get our material. We have a 4-tape set on Alzheimer's disease. You need to understand the background of Alzheimer's disease. We have a 4-tape set on mercury, actually 2 4-tape sets on mercury. We have a couple of DVDs on mercury, and you must understand that they put this into the vaccines, and they gave it to all of our children, and they poisoned them. We have a wonderful DVD. It's called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. When you get that DVD, you get free of charge with it a CD-ROM with literally thousands of pages of scientific data dealing with the toxicity of mercury. They know what they're doing. They just don't want you to know about it. You know a better way to destroy a great nation than to poison the population? Well, that's exactly what they're doing. So we do hope you'll go to our exchange and order any of these items you'd like to get. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You can go up onto our webpage at radioliberty.com and actually watch Dr. Ayoub's very excellent presentation, but we do hope that you'll want to get it and watch it on your big screen rather than the small one, and specifically so that you will have the CD-ROM with all of the references. And then you've got to help us to get the information out. Now, Dr. Ayoub's primarily talking about the mercury in the vaccines, but mercury is mercury, and it is so toxic. Why are they putting in mercury fillings when they know what the harm is going to be done? Well, the trouble is that the average dentist doesn't know. And the people within organized dentistry who do know either have a financial interest in it, they're making money off of it because of their relationships with the industry. In fact, they had the patent on the material that went into fillings for a long period of time. But other people are just plain wicked. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on really does make sense. Certainly, if you've not got our material on aspartame, we have an excellent couple of 4-tape sets on aspartame. We have DVDs on aspartame, Sweet Misery, a Sweet Remedy, and then, of course, we have the book, Evidence of Harm. If you're interested in how they're poisoning you and your children with fluoride, you need to get our 2 4-tape sets. We've got a couple of excellent DVDs on fluoride in drinking water. But one of the best things we have, and I hate to say it, but it's a talk we gave called The Hidden Agenda. And it comes with a syllabus, if you want to get that, and we recommend that syllabus very strongly. It's one of the best syllabuses we ever put together. And you'll see there the letters from health officers all throughout the world, in Europe and in Asia and India and in China, saying, why would anybody want to add fluoride to the water? We're trying to get the fluoride out of our water. And, of course, you will actually have the pages from Bertrand Russell's book where he talks about how certainly, you know, we've got to control the population. We just have a black plague sweep the earth. But he talks about what they're going to put in our food. And at one point he says, you know, the use of food and certainly additives, we're going to be able to control the people. And, of course, that's one thing about fluoride. It makes you very compliant. It takes away your desire to be an individual. If you doubt that, and you want to see the scientific studies on that and how the Germans used this during the Second World War, as did the communists, why go to our website of radioliberty.com and pull down our article there on fluoride. It's really rather well done, I think. Certainly a lot of this material is covered in Dr. Blaylock's, Russell Blaylock's excellent book, entitled Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We use that as a Bible. My wife calls it an encyclopedia, and she refers to it very, very frequently. Lots of great information there. Our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.